American Life, tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week it's a live event from the sunny climes of Tampa, Florida. From citrus to seafood, Spanish flavors, and southern charm, we're learning about what makes the food of South Florida so unique. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
There's no crying in baseball, but what about magic?
We use magic in places where we don't feel like we have control. And baseball has such an element of danger and uncontrollability.
I'm Amory Sievertson. Addie Baird writes about baseball's long history of jinxes, curses, and superstition in The Magical Game. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is owner and operator of Domesticities and the Cutting Garden in Youngsville, New York, Anne Hart. Anne and her husband, Fritz Mayer, know a lot about gardens. She's originally from Alabama, and up until age 7, she lived there until her family moved up to New York. She's been here in the Catskills full-time since 2001 and has owned Domesticities and the Cutting Garden in Youngsville, New York since 2004. She also was the Sullivan County Democratic Chair from 2021 to 2024. This gal wears a lot of hats. Let's get to it. Welcome to Catskill Character, Anne.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I love that you're from Alabama. You don't really have any remnants of an accent, but why don't you tell us about your early years there?
Well, I was born in Alabama, and it was still Jim Crow South. You know, you're living in a segregated society in a large city. When I was going into second grade, my dad, who worked for International Paper at the time, was transferred to New York. And that's one of the reasons that neither my brother nor I have an accent. As a kid, you want to fit in.
You said it was the Jim Crow South, but as a little kid, were you aware of that?
Yeah, it's part of your life, you know. I mean, we weren't rich or anything like that, but everybody had a maid and the maid was black. It was just very much part of the society at the time where you could see a racial discrimination, you know, a difference. There was an otherness about from us to them. You know, it was pretty obvious. My aunt, who was closer to me in age than she was to her sister, my mother, you know, she was in college at that time in the early 60s and, you know, found herself in a sorority, found herself reaching out to lonely black soldiers in a room where they were there. No one was talking to him. She was a very gregarious woman and got reprimanded for talking to a soldier because he was black. You saw this life. You saw it. You saw what it was. Your parents never, my parents anyway, never talked about it, but you knew what they felt. You know, it was there. It was, you know, you're taught stuff in church. You're taught stuff in school. You're taught about fairness, but you're seeing something else. You know, it's hard for little kids to kind of reconcile that.
Now, this is going to sound like a dumb question, but was your school segregated?
I was in Catholic school. It was totally segregated.
Oh.
You didn't go to public school. You went to private school. So my parents were Catholic. So I was in Catholic school, which was like a whole other thing.
Growing up Catholic in the South, I bet that's a whole other
yeah.
thing.
Because yeah. you're a minority yourself.
Okay, so when you were 7, your dad was transferred to Darien, Connecticut, right?
Oh, he was transferred to New York. His job was in
New York.
Okay. Yeah.
And you went to high school there. And after high school, you attended Mount Holyoke, which is a liberal arts college in Massachusetts. Those were interesting times, especially as it was emphasized at Mount Holyoke. One of their mottos is that you should, quote, discover your purpose. Did you begin to get a sense of your purpose while you were at Mount Holyoke?
Well, it's one of the reasons that I wanted to go there. My dad was in the advanced management program at Harvard during the protests in 1970. And he came home and said, you're not going to college in a major city. I refuse. You have to find college somewhere that's not in a major city. I don't like the violence. I don't like the protests. I don't like this. And I didn't know enough of myself to, you know, fight it or do anything. So, you know, with that as the background, as well as feeling that I wanted an education. I wanted to do something with my life. It would probably be really good for me to go to an all-women's college and not be, quote unquote, distracted. But actually, it was true because you are in an environment where all of that doesn't matter anymore. You don't have the teacher asking the guy, having the guy answer all the questions. You don't. It was a completely, completely different environment. It was a wonderful place to go to school because you were part of a five college area and you could take classes at any one of those colleges. So I took classes at Smith. I took classes at UMass. I took classes at Amherst. I took classes at Hampshire. So I wasn't completely divorced from the opposite sex for sure, but it was, you know, you. It was there was so much opportunity there because of that and because of the quality of the education that, you know, was provided there. I was recently reminded of this, but our commencement speaker was Lillian Hellman. In her commencement speech to us, she said, "You aren't doing enough for yourselves. Go out there and do it," and really admonished the entire class to go out and make something of themselves.
Okay, so what did you do after college?
Well, after college, I got a job in New York City because growing up in the suburbs of New York City, there was no place, you know, you never considered going anywhere else. You know, New York was the place you went. It's what you did. And so I got a job, you know, I got a job at a major money center bank and learned how to be a commercial lending officer and learned a lot about the world. Developed a lot of skills and didn't really like it too much, but I, you know, stuck it out long enough to get a pension. And you know, that's something. And you know, but I did, I learned a lot and I, you know, New York City is for young people. It really is. I loved every minute of living there. Every
Yes,
minute.
I don't have a lot of regrets in my life, but that's one of them. I never lived in the city. I always lived like in Montclair, New Jersey, which was like 12 miles outside of the city. So I went into the city. But I never lived there, and I always wish I had had that experience. But it was also very important for you because you met Fritz there.
I
Yeah,
did.
in Central Park, as you told me.
I did. I was born on St. Patrick's Day, and when I turned 25, it was a weekend, and I decided to have my birthday party in Central Park. Why not? And so he was one of the people who came with someone else that, you know, it's with someone I knew he came with. And there he was. And it was, you know, it was a nice serendipity. He was married to someone else at the time, so took a while. But you know, there he was. Yeah, so it was fun. And I also was proposed to that day by four very drunk young men from Englewood, New Jersey.
They're like that in Englewood.
Are they?
So, how did you guys end up in the Catskills? You're going to tell me something like I've heard so many times before, looking for a weekend house?
Pretty much, yeah. Looking for a weekend
Us
house.
too.
Looking for, yeah. We went camping a lot. There was a period of time where, you know, we wanted to get out of the city. We wanted to do other things. And there was 1 or 2 years we went like camping almost every weekend. And so we did it within a 2 hour circumference of the city. When we went to New Jersey, we went to places like Cape May and we weren't gonna, you know, that was different, but you know, more ex-urban kind of places. And so we spent a lot of time sort of within that 2 hour driving radius. And we knew nothing about the Catskills. It wasn't part of any of our lives or our histories. My husband is from Ohio and he grew up in Pennsylvania, so he didn't know. You know, it was like we had no idea of the history. We just liked the way it looked and the way it felt and the convenience of it. And so anyway, we went 1 weekend. We were camping, yeah, at that campground that no longer exists, that was on Filipinas Pond, Woodstock by the lake. We didn't even know the Woodstock site was like right there. We had no idea. And it was the weekend where there was one of those, you know, where like they weren't official reunions, but people would just gather there. And we were like, oh, I wonder what all that music is. We had no idea. I mean, everybody has their Woodstock story, you know, and we had ours too, which for me didn't involve going there. You know, it involved, I was a camp counselor in New Hampshire at the time, and all the senior counselors went. and left us with the campers.
Oh, nice.
And then didn't get back. You know, they had 3 days off. They didn't get back. And the only reason we didn't get in trouble was there were higher ups who also went. So it was like a big cover up, you know, and nothing happened. And the kids were fine. And, you know, the people finally, you know, made it back. But that was I didn't go to Woodstock because I was in New Hampshire doing a job I wasn't qualified for. So anyway, that was kind of a surprise, and you know, just to see, and then go. We were fishing in that pond. It was like, oh, that's where in the movie where they were all naked swimming in the
Those
spotlight.
naked people, right? You told me you and Fritz both were drawn to old houses. I was wondering, when you bought your house in Liberty, what did you have to do to that house?
It's a 1905 house. We had to upgrade the electric. The people had lived in this. They were only the second family to live in this house since probably the 1930s, 1940s. So that we kept the fact that there was no kitchen, you know, and it had a giant pantry. But there was layers and layers of paint. We stripped, we redid the floors. I mean, it kept us out of trouble. We redid the bathrooms. We did a lot, you know.
Wow. When you
Yeah,
say you wanted
it
to
kept us
renovate,
out of trouble.
that is
We're
crazy.
old house fans, you know, that like Bob Vila got to us.
Oh,
It was
gee.
like,
How did domesticities and the cutting garden come about?
well, we had kind of finished our house, and sort of life serendipity in the economy. You know, you get to a point in your life where you're kind of like, well, okay, we did this and we don't want to do it anymore. You know, with our jobs, both our jobs at that time were very high pressure. And, you know, we were just kind of like, all right, well, let's enter the next stage in our life because we loved old things. We loved old houses. We loved gardening. We were community gardeners in the city. And we had a garden here at the house. So we thought, well, what can we do that would make us a living and combine all the things that we really like to do? So we looked around for, you know, opportunities. And both of us for years had driven by the building and seen it empty, seen it sort of inhabited. I remember there was a period of time where there were like pink sheets in the big window in the front, and it looked like it needed some love, but it was like just a cool looking building, you know. And then eventually it came on the market, and we had been looking around specifically for something where there could be a retail store and a garden on a major thoroughfare. That's not so easy to find when you have a large open space where you could have a garden. We knew that we were too old to be farmers. We knew that we didn't want to invest in a huge multi-acre farm. We knew we couldn't do it. So this was sort of the idea of like, well, what could we do that, you know, at our age, what could we physically do that would be fun? We had a friend who volunteered in a pick-your-own flower farm, and we knew there was nothing like that around here. You know, there are farmers and vegetable growers and all this, but at that time there was nobody doing flowers. So we thought, well, why not? So it was sort of that the site itself, the building itself, the opportunity that it gave us sort of fit the bill.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I love about your place is there's something there for everyone. You
When you're in
know?
the middle of nowhere, you've got to try.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll take a break here, Anne, and come right back. I'm Donna Fellenberg speaking with today's guest, Anne Hart, and you've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole inviting you to ring in the summer and support Radio Catskill at the second annual Lou Beach Community House Summer Jamboree. Join us from 5 to 8 this evening for live music from Lolly and the Pops and Patsy Cline tribute group The Recliners, plus cold beer from Catskill Brewery. Tickets $25 at the door, benefiting Radio Catskill. Info at wjffradio.org. The Lou Beach Community House Summer Jamboree, a project of the Beaverkill Valley Land Trust.
Radio Catskill, keeping New York voters connected this election season. Early voting is happening now in New York State and goes through June 21st. All registered voters in Delaware County are eligible to cast an early vote at the Board of Elections office on 97 Main Street in Delhi. Find your New York early voting polling place at elections.ny.gov. That's elections.ny.gov. Primary election day is June 23rd. This is Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and if you've just joined us, my guest today is Anne Hart. Anne has been telling us a bit about her life, growing up in Alabama for the first 7 years, and then up in New York, where she went through high school. She attended Mount Holyoke, and upon graduating, she lived and worked in New York City, met her husband, Fritz. I think Fritz worked at CNN, right?
Yes, he did.
And they eventually bought a house up here and 22 years ago opened Domesticities and the Cutting Garden in Youngsville, New York. And you and Fritz combined the things you loved and opened a very unique business. And you told me about the three elements of the shop. I'd like you to share that with the listener.
Oh, sure. The shop itself has a number of rooms. One of the rooms contains work that is locally made, that is fair trade or American made. So it's all the new stuff. Then there are two rooms. There's the old kitchen we turned into, sort of the feeling of an old kitchen. So you can find vintage kitchenware from probably like the early 1900s all the way through to, you know, the 1970s.
You know, that was my favorite room. I didn't have, you know, I had to buy a lot of stuff. I bought so many things from that room.
It's everybody's favorite room because it's just like, it's like your grandmother's kitchen.
Exactly.
You know, and it brings back all this nostalgia. And interestingly enough, all that stuff that was made then still works really well. You know, somebody bought a beater from me that was that avocado green 1970s electric beater. She bought it 10 years ago and she came and she goes, it finally broke. You have another one?
Yeah. Just slightly newer.
You know, she didn't even mind the avocado green, but it was just, you know, the right size beater. Yeah, everybody loves that room. Yeah. So that's the kitchen room. Then there's another room, which initially that part of the building we rented out to a local small church. And when they left, we were like, oh, what do we do with this room? So it went through a lot of iterations. You know, at one point we had way too many chairs and it was the chair room. And we decided at some point with help from our neighbors, such as Maria Grimaldi from Panther Rock Farm and Amy Gillingham from Wild Roots Farm and Trina Pilonero, to give classes there. And so there was a women's group at the time where we taught what we knew to other women. Then we would meet once a month at different locations. So we did seed saving one time. And Maria gave great permaculture classes there, and we did seed starting and plant swapping and did that for a long time until it seemed like, okay, that ran its course. In the summer, we had a little festival called From the Ground Up where we featured all local artists who worked at home. Some had studios where people came, some did not. And it was, you know, it was one day in August and it was a lot of fun. And there wasn't anything else like it going on. This was before Bethel Woods opened up. And we were one of the early places where Yarn Slingers came. And one of the Yarn Slingers events was in the kitchen itself. And wow. It was...
I guess we didn't have a very big audience back then.
No, well, we had a lot of stuff going outside, but the one person who was in the room wanted to do it in the kitchen. And so you did it, you know, so it was sort of like a moving Yard and Slingers, you know, where people did their stories in different places. And so, you know, that was fun for a long time too. And then Yarn Slingers outgrew us for sure. You know, there were just lots of things that we were always very open to, you know, how could we be of help or host any kind of thing that might come along that would be fun to do.
That's the mark of a really great place. It doesn't stay static. It moves, it grows, it glows. You know, that's what you've been doing there for the last 22 years. And for the last 8 years, you started doing things in the back room of the building, which, by the way, you said this house was built, I think, in the 1870s.
It's 1874.
Yeah, yeah. Now you're hanging shows in that back room. It's become an art gallery. It's a delightful place. It has its own entrance. And I might add that you're featuring artists who are very serious artists, like Marjorie Morrow, an abstract painter who lived and worked in New York for 50 years before she moved up here permanently in 2018. Now, she is the real deal. And I believe that show is running till the end of the month, right?
Yeah, it's up till the end of the month. The opening was last weekend. It was extremely well attended. She has a great following among other artists and other people in the community. And the work's really special. It's very colorful. It's very dynamic. And for whatever reason, the theme this year has ended up being about the landscape. These abstracts are just really, really phenomenal. She's got a really good sensibility. And if you like abstract art, it's a kind of abstract art that you can understand. You know, some of it, people feel like, I don't get what I'm seeing, but you do with her work. You see it. And that's, you know, that's something that's really important and it's very enjoyable. And she's showing up randomly and, you know, will just be there. You know, like the other day she came in and people came in and there they were in there for half an hour.
Oh, that's great. How often do you have these shows?
Well, this summer, we're having something different every month through October. We started in April with a show with Steve Davis and Kevin Greff. They're both very local to me. Kevin is in Jeffersonville. Steve lives up the hill in Youngsville. This month is Marjorie. Next month will be Maureen Neville, who does these amazing photographs of her travels
yes.
and of the place where she lives. And so she'll be having photographs of her trips to Block Island. Most recently, she went in the middle of a snowstorm and couldn't barely leave the place that she was staying in. And of course, she has great shots of the river and the barn across the street from her and the cows. So that's going to be really fun. And then in August, we decided to open up the garden for plein air artists. So every Sunday in August, you are invited to come and paint between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Just let us know you're coming and just paint the garden. Paint what you see. We've had other plein air artists come in and do it as a group, but this is just sort of open to anybody who wants to try their hand.
Is there somebody who's going to give instructions to the novices, or you're there, you're on your own, go for it.
Yeah, go for it. Set yourself up, stake your claim, and go for it. And then in September, we're going to have an artist named Sharon Malloy, whose work is really interesting. It's sort of the conflict between the natural and the built world, and sort of the reconciliation between what's happening in the world, the relationship of us to nature, to God. It's very thought-provoking. She's got a lot of really small works. It'll be really, really interesting. And then the following month, we're having Robin Omquist, who is a very interesting artist, and she does these amazing lino cuts. And so she will have a little bit of nature thrown in and a little bit of politics thrown in. So I'm looking forward to them. Years ago, Robin and the late Claire Coleman did a show together, which was just a beautiful, beautiful show. And I'm looking forward to having Robin back again.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Would you just tell the listener what a lino cut is?
It's a material that the image is created by carving out.
Okay.
I did one in fifth grade where we did self-portraits in lino cuts, and I remember very vividly knowing how I couldn't do it, and I still have that picture somewhere. You know, it was self-portraits we were supposed to do, but Robin is really good at it, and they're very graphic. You know, they're black and white, and they're just so vivid and graphic and clear. It's really, really interesting work.
And of course, we can't pass over the barn. It's a DIY folks paradise. But I have to say, I've bought beautiful pieces in there that I just picked up, put in the car, and brought to the farm and put it out immediately. It's fantastic.
That's great. Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's sort of where we call it where you can find the rusty, dusty things that are still interesting or useful, or you can do something with them. There's old tools in there. There's furniture that's a little bit rickety in there, but perfectly useful. You can either glue it or not glue it. Refinishing opportunities for furniture that's like too far gone to like care about the patina, but that could be useful. There's, you name it, it's in there.
You can spend hours in there.
Yeah, actually, yeah, yesterday in that thunderstorm, there was a group of women who I saw out of the go in there out of the corner of my eye right before the storm started, and then it was raining and raining and raining, and I was like, you know, they're either really enjoying themselves or they're stuck because it's raining. And I went out there with an umbrella and I said, are you stuck? Are you enjoying yourselves? I just want you to, you know, here, do you need an umbrella? And they're like, well, we are really enjoying ourselves. And they were poking through everything and they said, but we are stuck too, you know. So, you know, so they took the umbrella and came in. But it was, you know, they were out there for a good period of time, just sort of poking. It's good to poke around.
Well, if you're going to get stuck, that's a great place to be stuck.
Yeah. And we didn't even get to the garden.
We didn't get to the garden. Listen,
Yeah.
folks, you go into the garden, you cut flowers, you tell them better than me.
So it's entirely you pick. We have scissors and a bucket and water and containers for you to take it home. You have no excuse. It whatever we give, you know, the container we give you will fit in your cup holder. You have absolutely no excuse for not to buying them. So you go in the garden. If you've never done it before, we'll give you a brief tutorial. You know, here's where you cut. This is what you look for. You know, this one is too far gone. You don't want it. This one is not ready. You know, little tips and tricks about picking flowers. And then we let them loose and they do whatever they want. It's not expensive. People are
No.
always happy. Yesterday, people came looking for flowers and I'm like, we just have peonies and foxgloves. And they came up with the most beautiful thing with those two elements. For me, it's really fun to just watch people out there doing it and picking their arrangements
Yeah.
and having fun. And then there are people who know what they're doing. They know exactly what to do. They come, they do it, and then they say, this is what I got. And I'm like, okay, that's it. And they go on their way. So it's, you know, again, it's just really loose and open and joyful.
I have to say, what a wonderful adventure it is to go to Domesticity's and the Cunning Garden right there on Route 52 in Youngsville. You can't miss it. Thank you so much again, Anne. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate being on. I appreciate your show.
Thank you, Anne. This has been Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today has been Anne Hart, owner operator, along with her husband Fritz Mayer, of Domesticity's and the Cutting Garden in Youngsville, New York. The website is thecuttinggarden.org, and she can also be found on Facebook and on Instagram. She is domesticities.thecuttinggarden. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 11:30. Please join me then for more fascinating stories of characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at CatskillsPropertyCare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Shane Torres was disappointed with the current state of American cuisine.
You know it was getting bad when we all allowed Flamin' Hot to be a flavor? Because like neither one of those words is a flavor.
That's right.
I'm Peter Sagal. Tune in this week for the news quiz that looks spicier than it is. This week with the author of the book of the summer, Yesteryear. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
On this Old House Radio Hour, a very special Father's Day episode with summer HVAC tips and DIY.
The best thing you can do is turn the thermostat up. The smaller the temperature difference between indoors and outdoors, the less energy you're going to use for cooling.
Plus, comedian Ben Glebe opens the doors to his modest San Fernando Valley home. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.